You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your program, Is Your Ticket, is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of those as possible while still discussing the biggies. Tonight's show is the first of a new series called Act Two Places. I'm bringing on a series of guests to discuss how COVID-19 affected them and their organizations. It's a cheery topic. As you all know, we've been hit hard with a complete, hopefully temporary, change of lifestyle and business systems during this pandemic, and theater definitely wasn't spared. In fact, theater has undergone one of its biggest shifts, if not the biggest shift in theater in modern history. This series gives theater folks an opportunity to discuss the effects of this shift on them and their organization. My guests on today's show are the critically lauded, award-winning New York Neo-Futurists. Fans may recognize a few voices, most notably the Neo's artistic director, Mr. Rob Neal, who has been a guest on your program Is Your Ticket multiple times. I think I need to start, like, handing out jackets like they do on Saturday Night Live.
I want a jacket.
Okay, I'll try. Well, he is back, you just heard him, with members of his very talented team, who are a collective of wildly productive writer, director, performers. That's from their website. And I'm super excited to have the chance to speak with them. So let's bring them on. Hello, New York Neo-Futurists, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hey!
Hi!
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. It's a little rainy and muggy here in New York City, but perfect day to stay in and record a show, right?
Yes, sure. It's so atmospheric.
Cool. let's have you all introduce yourselves and tell us your function with the Neos. Rob, why don't you go first?
Okay, sure. Hey, everybody. Hey, Sean. I am Rob Neal, and I am an ensemble member, and as you mentioned, I am also the current artistic director of the company.
Mm-hmm.
How about I hand it off to Anuj?
Awesome. Thanks, Rob. So my name is Anuj Bhandari, and I am an ensemble member at the New York Neo Futurists, and I've been in the ensemble since March 2018.
Let's go.
Oh, and I'll pass it to Katie.
Hello. My name is Katie K. Chelina. I am an ensemble member in the New York Neo Futurists, and I'm super excited that we're all here. And I'm going to pass it, last but not least, to Anthony.
Okay. Hi, I'm Anthony Sertel-Dean. I use they, them, and he, him pronouns. I am the technical director for the New York Neo Futurists. I'm also the sound designer and one of the producers for our current podcast, Hit Play.
You guys, like, this guy is so teched out. He has, like, a full-on microphone that he's holding up to his face, if you're listening to the podcast of this, and there's, like, branding behind him. Well, I could definitely take notes from you, Anthony, that's for sure. Rob, why don't you tell our audiences a brief history of the New York Neo-Futurists?
A brief history, yeah. As you mentioned, we're a collective of artists, and in 1995, a small collective of artists first came to New York and started the show that we did then, Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. And we did it for about 3 years and then disappeared to the different corners of New York artistry and winds. it was a shorter-lived run. And then in 2004, we opened the current branch of the New York Neo-Futurists, again at that point doing a show called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind, which is similar to what we were doing until the spring of this year, which was the show called The Infinite Wrench. At that point, our ensemble was 10, and we created that show twice a week for 50 weeks out of the year for those years. And we've expanded the ensemble, and different people have come in and out over the the last 15, 16 years. We've had over 70 different artists do the shows that we do, probably more than that, because we do more than just one weekend show. And we've created over, or maybe just under, but somewhere around the 6,000 play mark in our time since 2004. A variety of shows and a variety of artists getting a chance to create as neo-futurists do.
That boggled my mind. I remember the first time I met you guys was when I interviewed you backstage at the New York Innovative Theater Awards, mm-hmm. where I believe you won that time.
I've won a few of those, luckily, for both Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind and The Infinite Wrench. And then we were awarded the Cafe Chino Award one year, which was amazing. And we have won for some of our main stage shows let's see which ones have won. It's Mute won for sound design. There are lots of different Innovative Theater Awards that we've been nominated for, and I can't recall all the different ones we've won for. But most recently we've won for The Infinite Wrench at the Innovative Theater Awards, and we also were honored with the Honeyberry Award for, I think it's
Unrecognized.
There we go.
The queer community.
Yeah.
Wait, say that again.
It was the Honeybee Award from the Fresh Fruit Festival, which is like a queer and LGBTQ theater uh-huh. awards thing, for underrecognized service to the LGBTQ community. I believe was like the tagline of the award. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's super great. Cool.
Yeah. I can appreciate that, having been queer myself. So that's
it's
wonderful.
Party on the call. My right? God.
Okay. How did the COVID crisis affect the New York neo-futurists?
Oof.
There are so many ways in which I think we can answer that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for me, one of the really big ways that comes to the top of the list is that like there's a lot of like labor of love that goes into making like a smaller theater company thrive continually, and a lot of the return of that labor of love is the in-person time we get to spend with each other and making and being anything on the spectrum of like poetic and serious to like unhinged and goofy, you know. Right. And so being able to keep like the love of the company central, and the labor of love that continues to go into sustaining it, even without getting to have that like physical live theater space making, I think has been a huge part, right? And I know for me personally, like one of the things I love about our show is that it's like an inverse of meditation almost. Like during meditation, the idea is to like almost block off all the senses. And when you're performing in the Infinite Wrench, all of your senses are on such high overload that you have no option but to be super present. And so switching to live formats has also challenged just like how I experience that. You know, it's different doing it in a live theater versus like on a screen or through audio when you can like hear yourself again or see yourself while you're doing the thing. All of the ways that like you interact even with yourself as a performer, those dynamics completely change. So, I mean, those are some things off the bat in my mind that come up.
Yeah, I would add that I think that trying to bend this very spontaneous and very physical form into an online format has been both challenging and sort of a gift because it pushes us to find new ways of creating things, and that's really exciting, and I do think that there's some joy in that, and it's been really difficult, especially there were a few of us in the company who had COVID, and I think learning not only how to just how to survive, but how to use art and how to pour oneself into art as a way of surviving has been useful and hard.
Indeed. Anthony, yeah, how about you as tech director?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just from...
We'll get to you, Rob, I promise.
I mean, from a very practical standpoint, we've just completely had to shift how we make art, as Katie and Anuj were talking about, because I feel like it's very much in our nature to constantly be creating. I mean, we put out a show with new work 50 weeks out of the year, so like we keep this train going at all times. So we've immediately, once we realized we're not going to be able to continue doing our show in the same way, we adapted and tried to think of different ways that we could still make work that felt personal and felt pressing and felt like neo-futurist art. So together with an ensemble member, Julia Melfi, she and I came up with the idea to do a kind of podcast version of what we do on stage normally. And so we've been doing that for many weeks. I think we have 40 episodes out right now.
Wow.
About 150 plays have been on the podcast. So still trying to find out. We're still experimenting. Like, still playing around with a bunch of new things, seeing what neo-futurist art means in this virtual space, and figuring out what we really want to be doing and how we want to be expressing our voices that way.
To speak to your point, Katie, I've often said that when your resources get smaller, your imagination can get bigger.
Absolutely.
When you have to make something happen and you only have so much, creativity really sort of starts to bubble up inside of you. So I can understand how you would say that it was partly a gift as well. That's a really nice positive way of looking at it. Rob, as the artistic director, just so that other artistic directors can hear what it was like for you, what was it like those first couple of days after the hatchet went down?
It was supremely confusing. I think a lot of what it was not knowing what to do. We were in the middle of auditions for the ensemble for a show that we didn't know and still don't know when we'll do that show again, right?
Right.
So we had lots of discussions because, you know, we're an ensemble. We're a collective. Everybody, we had to decide collectively, like, what we do. And we, even before there was a government regulation that we couldn't gather, we stopped doing our shows. We didn't have our callbacks. And then those first few days, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of, you know, we embrace chaos as neo-futurists. We say we look at what the world is and put we're in the world and we reflect back and amplify voices and tell stories. But like when you take away some of the fundamentals of what we can do as a community theatrically, what we can do as people, like you don't have answers right away. And part of it was just getting people together and talk about it and provide support, because even, you know, the first few days, let alone the first few weeks, let alone the first few months of being in a pandemic, and then adding the murders of all these, you know, George Floyd and so many other people and protests, like the world is, like the chaos is different.
Yeah.
It's almost like what we were doing before was, you know, embracing a manufactured chaos almost, right? And so part of what we needed to do was, and what I felt was a big part of my role was help us bolster support of not only the people in the community, the people in the company, the people in, you know, but then what outwardly facing, what can we do, right? How do we do that as a company? How do we support people in ways? Yeah, we can tell our stories and amplify voices, and that's important. But where is the support? How are people getting by day to day, and how is that changing? You know, one of the things we said early on, it's like, we're going to do these artistic things as we can, and they're experiments. We don't know where we're going to, but if you aren't able to do it, that's totally fine. It's an individual choice. And if you want to be a part of it, great. If you want to be a part of it today and not tomorrow, great. But take what you need to do to take care of yourself. And how can we help?
That's terrific. It's nice to see, and that's what I'm hoping this series will inspire, sort of an evolution of progress. Mm. The people figuring it out. I know when it first happened, after about 4 days, I put out something on my Facebook page saying if anybody wanted to do a podcast with me to sort of talk about what they were doing, what they were getting through, I'd be happy to. And I got no response. Usually if I do that, I have 3 or 4 people who want to do a show. And I was talking to my husband about it, and he was like, okay, this just happened. Their heads are probably spinning. They're dealing with not what they want to do, you know, 3 months down the line, but what they're going to do today and tomorrow. And so I had to realize that and give people their space for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll just add in that world, like, you know, we're dealing with art and how do we, and that's one thing, but it's people and how, and the people are the people that make up the company, the people that support the company and all that. And we had a model where a majority of our company's income was based on in-person events, shows, gigs, and workshops. And we didn't know it exactly then, but like over the time, like all that's gone. All that way of getting financial support for our company, financial support to pay people, that disappeared. How do you change that? So that also comes into it. But the part about supporting the people comes first, right? Like,
right.
You have to worry about that.
Yeah, I was super grateful for the fact that Rob's first response was as an artistic director when everything went down was to create these weekly check-ins, and Rob was calling ensemble members every day to make sure we were good, to see if we were feeling okay, you know, just to continually check in with people. And I think there are a lot of theater spaces where that kind of care from someone in a leadership position is just not there, you know? And so I think that a big part of why we've even been able to continue creating art at all has been the care and the intention that we've been putting into our community.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
And for me, that's like something that's like challenging and not, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
I think that for a lot of theater artists, like the theater is the community space. The people you make theater with is the community space. And I think like a lot of that obviously is like shifting and dynamic. I do think that like a simple starting point is really to ask, how do we take care of our artists, right? Like, how do we take care of the people in the community as dynamics start to shift and change? And like, that as a central question is essential for like creating, being able to create like a space for people to thrive in. And thrive is an interesting word, right? Like, I think we're all on some kind of a spectrum between surviving and thriving right now. But I definitely think that like, it's not easy in that loss of community is hard. It's easy in that like, you really just have to ask the question, like, how do we take care of each other when things start to change?
And that it's not just one person. It's not just up to one person. It's about having that network and making sure that, you know, people are talking to each other. And if they need whatever they need, we can help them find that or provide that, depending if we have it or not, you know.
Back in my day, we called that the phone tree.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what it was like? Like everybody called, this person calls, and or is it just everybody just took it upon themselves to just stay in contact?
I think it's been a couple different, I think it's sort of manifested in a couple different ways. I think that there has been sort of the phone tree. I think that we've created these consistent spaces where everyone can, you know, be on a Zoom call hanging out and just checking in, and you can get a feel for your collaborators and your friends and their energy and how they're like, are you looking okay? You know, do you look just exhausted? Do I need to check in with you afterwards? So, and like even on our, we use Slack for a lot of just logistics within the company.
What is that? I'm sorry. What's Slack?
It's like a messaging platform that allows us to sort of not be on email chains all the time.
Right.
Which is great. But we, I created a mutual aid section on our Slack so that when we were finding like resources for artists who were completely out of work, grant opportunities, information about unemployment, like we could put all of these resources in one place so that there was a spot, you know, because receiving all of that information about, okay, I have to have this application done by this deadline so that I can buy groceries next week. It's stressful. Right. And so having a spot for those things was, I think, also important.
And I think having those channels of communication, part of it, doing the art, like the podcast Hit Play and Cyber Wrench, which launches at the end of the month on the 29th, is another part of it. But then there's also the kind of skill share and the development that we've really been able to put in these times. Anthony's led a workshop yesterday and is leading another one in digital production today. Anuj has been doing some great work with us and leading us in anti-racism work and having things where we're developing and supporting people and not only giving them ways to find out about opportunities for jobs, but expanding our collective knowledge and our capabilities, I think, is really important.
Yeah, I think that's something that's been really, about how we've been approaching things that I've really enjoyed is that I feel like a lot of it has been just we are trying to make space, and we're not saying, okay, now everyone in the ensemble, you got to do this thing, you got to make this art so that you can still be a part of this company. No, we're just saying, here are the things we're trying to create space for, and if you want that space to use your voice, to share your ideas, like, we want to make that space for you, but we're not saying, okay, time to go to your art job, make the art.
Yeah. That's great. You know, I am a playwright and a screenwriter, and when I started to get a little traction on my career, I'm so neurotic that I have to see a psychologist for success. So that's pretty much what we talked about as things were evolving with my writing career. And I asked her, I said, how can I best handle this? And this is a lady who dealt with a lot of people in New York and LA, a lot of artist types. And she said, Sean, my number one piece of advice is that if you make the relationships that you have with people in these systems the number one priority, you will always be successful. And that really just kind of popped out to me when you were talking about how at first it was just like touch base to make sure everyone is okay as a human being. And I think that's really cool. I think I love that you sort of espoused, whether you knew it or not, you espoused that philosophy from my psychologist. So that's very, very cool. Okay. Anthony, go into a little bit more detail about your involvement in shifting everything over into a sort of a cyber show. It's called Cyber Wrench, so that's cool. Yeah. Which is seems like what was one of the things that kept everybody going through this. Give everybody hope.
Sure. Yeah, we're just trying to, as I was saying before, make space for that art to be to have some sort of platform. We really just wanted to just have it be open. Julia and I were like, because we have background in making podcasts, we're like, great, we know how to get a podcast off the ground.
Right.
Let's launch this ship. But we then just really tried to open it up as much as we could, trying to get any input, being like, saying, we have this idea for what a podcast, a Neo-Futurist podcast might look like. We want to know what you want to be making, seeing what kind of ideas were brought to pitch in terms of plays, and then adjusting accordingly. Really trying to play around with what an audio, because when we talk about the plays that we're bringing into the show, we don't call them plays, we call them audio experiments, because everything that we've been doing here is very much an experiment, trying to see how we can tell stories or just bring things across through an audio medium. And so with that now rolling along, we the special events team that we have within the company, we're talking about putting a live show together, because there's something about that liveness. I believe all four of us here were a part of the Orchard Project's liveness lab, just talking about what liveness means in general and very specifically in these times.
What is that now? What is the Orchard Progress? What was that again? I'm sorry.
The Orchard Project had a group called the Liveness Lab, where we were talking about a bunch of different ideas around liveness and technology, with some really great panelists and speakers. And we had special groups talking about specific aspects in that discussion.
Was this a response to COVID-19, or is this something that's gone on for a while? Specifically a response for COVID-19?
Yeah, I believe so, correct?
Okay.
Yeah.
I see Rob nodding his head, so.
Yeah.
Very cool. Wow, and so you said all of a sudden, like, you're the main focus of shifting things around, because you're the one, you and Julia?
Yes, we
can make it happen with your experience.
Right. And so we then tried to create a platform for people to bring in whatever wild ideas that they may have. Like we do, we just try to kind of re-bring that sense of community found in the room when we're coming together on Tuesday evenings, pitching plays, trying to come out with new ideas for what we want to bring to our audience. And then with Rob and Katie, we decided to create a live show to experiment with that even more, playing with what we can do with having people see us in real time again, playing around with how video works within Neo-Futurism. And there's been a whole lot of video work that we've been doing in addition to the podcast work. We've been trying to really break out. Yes, a lot of our effort has gone into the podcast, and I realize that I'm going off in many different tangents here, but I think that's because we've been doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that we're doing Hit Play. Anuj was leading up we were doing weekly short films, and Katie was heading up special events that we were trying to do a couple times a month. And we have a Patreon that was hopefully funding the ability of artists to create in this. And then
also our Pride show.
And we did a live Pride show. And Katie and Anuj currently are in the San Francisco Neo-Futurist Weekly Show. And Kyra is doing the Chicago Neo-Futurist Weekly Show. And so we have all these things kind of swirling. And from those experiences comes Cyber Rich.
Yeah, I personally, like, I was so excited when Hit Play, our podcast, started happening, and I found that, like, I loved listening so much, and I loved making audio experiments, but I kept having this, like, I kept finding myself saying, okay, I miss the people, I miss, like, the response. I think that was something that absence I really felt in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think with all of these different things that we're trying, all of these different containers, it's really a continuation and an attempt to replicate that feeling of starting a timer for an hour in the Infinite Wrench and trying to do as many plays as possible. I think we're still trying to like sort of give ourselves enough structure where we can create infinitely. But it's harder when you have to get used to a whole new set of tools. It's hard.
Yeah, one of the things that I've been thinking about specifically in terms of like relationships between like us making art for the show versus like outside and all these different mediums, one of the things that stays really consistent for me is the challenge of just like what mediums can we dive into, right? Like, I think that's one of the things we're always asking on stage is like, how do we just bring different forms of art to the stage, whether it's like visual forms or making live sculptures or simple machines or videos, you know, all of these things. Like we all perform as ourselves, and so there's this really beautiful process of like tapping into the personal narrative or communal narrative and then saying, how does this translate into another form besides just telling you what happened, you know? And that stays like really exciting. And in digital form, we get to play with all different things, you know? We've made like coloring books and coloring pages, just all different types of mediums are being explored and played with. And that feels like something that's stayed consistent about the making process, is just saying like, what's the narrative that we are experiencing? And then how does this like abstract or transpose into another medium? And now like, it doesn't just have to be the mediums that we can bring into the crane. It can be like any medium we want to explore. And like, and then the idea of being able to explore any medium turns a huge part of the process into documentation. Like the sharing is in the documenting of the thing we are exploring and doing. And centering documentation and process as an art form, I think, is incredible. I think it's like revolutionary to how most theaters function.
Yeah, I've never even thought that, but that's great. It's a great like realization.
Yeah. And like we are a company that already was taking constraints and using them as gifts to give us art or to create art out of. And these are new constraints. And it's like what the Cyber Wrench is, isn't like, oh, we've got to do a show online. It's like, no, we're creating an event, 8:00, the last Saturday every month. And it's the Cyber Wrench, and it's taking that and putting it out there. It's embracing all the stuff Anuj was just talking about mediums and how we're creating and then going, and you don't even have to be in the same place as us to see this now, right? That's a gift. You can be anywhere, as we say. You can be in your bathtub as long as you don't drop your computer in the bathtub, you know?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that disclaimer. Or your phone, I mean, you know.
Or your phone,
Your phone's not going to electrocute you, I don't think. Don't try it. That's just, I never said that. Now, your performance style has such a sense of immediacy to it. You have four core principles that you all abide to when it comes to anything that you do. You are who you are where you are, you are doing what you are doing, and the time is now. Now, have those core principles and that sense of immediacy helped and assisted you in bridging this gap to go online? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I feel, for me, we build this muscle as neo-futurists on stage to be as responsive and as present as possible. And so I think that that muscle being already sort of developed and that it demands a self-awareness and a continual sort of like processing what is happening at all times and making sure that you are you are alive in the world and you are engaging with the world, because that's what we need to make our art. You know, that's the material. That's the fabric that we're weaving. So I'm super grateful that muscle was built already.
Right.
Because I think that, perfectionism is the curse of the artist. And in neo-futurism, there's no time for perfectionism. So you have to respond. You have to speak. And so the way that we do that is to find the kernel of truth in what we're trying to make art about. You know, is this play a bearing of my soul, and how do I find the little nugget that shows you my soul? Or is this play about connecting with other people and reminding us of that physical connection that we're missing, that a lot of us are missing? How do I do that? So I think just the continual process in neo-futurism of getting straight to the heart of it has allowed us to do this. It's also the biggest hurdle for me, I think, has been the question of how to handle the time is now, right? The fourth sort of tenet of neo-futurism is that the time is now. We are experiencing this together right now. But when you're making a video that someone is watching whenever they're watching it, how does that change? I think that's been a big question for me. And so there's not only this investigation of what's going on for me, the artist, but also how do I create something that's going to still be true and real and vital and alive for someone who is watching 2 weeks from now or a month from now, or who stumbles onto the New York neo-futurists in a year and says, oh, what's this? How do I make art that's still alive then?
That's often a question for writers. So yeah. I hear you totally. It's like, how is this going to be, what's going to change in the future? You almost have to be somewhat of an amateur prophet to sort of figure out.
I think it's a very like spiritual task, you know, it's because it's about not only what we are sort of providing as catharsis in telling our own stories, but also how are we creating a collective moment? And I think that it is sort of heightened and sort of like, I think it's a holy thing.
Yeah. I mean, I also just guess that makes me think about like the importance of reducing the presence of a need for perfection, right? Mm-hmm. Of like thinking, where will this thing land in the future? Like, I think audiences are brilliant and communities are brilliant, and they will do the work with the work we make anyways, right? And so a part of perfectionism, I think, is wanting to align what we create with a certain thing that we want to be heard or listened to or experienced. And like, at the end of the day, like, we don't have full agency over that anyways. And so it's like, why try to perfect this thing that A, isn't intended to be perfected? And then if B becomes too didactic, like, honestly just takes away from the knowledge, the like ability of our audiences and the people who interact with the work, right? Like, I just like love so much what Katie said, that like there's no time for perfection in neo-futurism. Because for me, that's like one of the things about being in this ensemble that I'm just like, I think we were set up for this time in a way that we're still able to make things because we function off of like an intense sense of presence, right? And I mean that in like both the most and least cliche way possible, you know? Like, it really is about dismantling perfection and like the tremendous impact that perfectionist standards have on so many communities through literally just being like, who am I in this moment? And what is the relationship between that and the world around me? Right. And it might fly with other people in the way that I want it to. And it might fly in a way that they get to build connection to it in their own way. And both of those are completely fine, you know? Yeah.
And I'll just say, and the importance of the authenticity that we bring, like as neo-futurists, like, that authenticity is a baseline, and if you're being authentically you in whatever the play or the experiment is, like, that just is that. And no matter what happens, if the sound goes out or you know, it's an event. And that's why I think that with Cyber Wrench, or with what we did in the Pride show too, the Pride week, we did a whole week. When we're having these interactions, you can't help but be neo-futurist, because it's happening right now, and anything that happens is valid. And you fall back on if there are things that happen that you didn't plan for, that's okay, because I'm still me and I'm just doing my thing, and you're still you, and we're all doing our thing together, and it's going to be something, and it's going to be real.
Yeah, I feel like oftentimes when we're doing,
like that, exactly, like
exactly,
that.
Yeah. I mean, so much.
The time is now.
The time is right now.
Time for a phone call, I guess. Multiple platforms. Sorry.
No, it's a great. It's great. I was going to say that so much of the time when we're in the theater and we're looking at what do we need for next week, we frequently hear the need or the want for mess, and like, sure, that can mean like throwing a pineapple against the wall, but which creates a very physical mess. But I think that also calls back to what we're wanting here in the time is now. Things are going to go wrong. And going back to Anuj, your point of documentation, I think there's something like really beautiful in like going back and looking at like, oh, here is the mess that we made, and here is the beauty and the that has come from that mess. Where does that mess lead us? I really enjoy following the mess.
Well, I have to say that you've done so much work on your mission statement and your core principles, and I think it's like any government, not to compare you guys to a government, but if the work is there, then when difficulty happens, when trauma happens and tragedy happens, if your principles are solid and really, really well thought out, then they will survive that. You can adapt, saying, okay, well, this is there. And this is, we go back to that. We go back and ask the principles and the mission what we should do. And your question, I think most of the time will be answered. And so, you know, congratulations to all of you for putting all that together and then staying true. It's really, really nice work. And I think that it's providing, when people listen to this, it's going to provide them with so much hope, all the work that you put into it, and, you know, hopefully get them to, you know, create their own agendas and their own plans. And, you know, at a time when a lot of people just have a hard time getting out of bed in the morning, So great work. Speaking of the future, what are the plans of the New York New Futurists for when we emerge from COVID? And we will. What does that vision look like?
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
That is,
yeah.
It's part of the great mystery, I think, for one. Like, I'm so excited for it feels like a mythical day when we'll be able to go into our theater, which will look very different because of like renovations to make it safe.
I read about that in The Crane.
Yeah. They've been doing a lot of hard work to make it as safe as possible to return to theaters whenever we are able to. And so I'm excited for that day, and I think in the immediate future, we continue to build this newfound platform that we're creating now. You know, I think that there are so many questions about what theater is going to look like when we come back. I think there are questions about there are so many exciting opportunities in thinking about, okay, what if we continue doing Cyber Wrench? What if we continue our online offerings so that we can continue building community even beyond where we are physically? So I think for me, it's the excitement of this hybrid that theater can become, where theater is not just the place where we physically gather, but it's also this wider, more expansive, more experimental, curious, joyful way of creating.
Brilliant. Yeah, and I think it's crucial that we're bringing all of that into the theater as well.
Yeah.
Like all of this, like experimentation, like questioning, like as Anuj was saying before, we are always trying to, in this theater, what can we do to change how we're telling these stories? And that's expanded out so much, really living in all these digital platforms, getting comfortable with all these digital platforms. And I think there's so much ability to bring those digital platforms back into the physical space. And we have such a much more exciting physical space when we bring those in there. And we're already trying to bring that physicality into the digital. Let's bring it back and then back again and then back again until we have just infinite art ideas.
Anybody else want to speak to that?
I'll just add that I think that, you know, most speculating on going back is a thing that we've definitely done in the Liveness Lab, we've done as a company, you know, the whole theater community, and it's happening differently in different countries and even in different states. I'm intrigued to see if I can even make it to Massachusetts, the social distance Godspell up there in a tent. Quinceañera, I couldn't get tickets to. It's sold out. There's an immersive quinceañera project that's happening this weekend. But that being said, for us, the Crane has changed. Erez has done some great work there about how we're probably looking at a time where artists can go in there and stream from there. And then there's going to be a time where artists can go in and stream from there. I mean, it's all like socially distanced and careful. And a few audience members can come and see the show live. And then that will probably build up and build up and build up until I think you have maybe a full theater and artists and everything's similar to what it was. But we're also, I think, going to embrace the technology. Like Anthony's saying, we're experimenting with these new technologies that no longer do you have to show up at a time and place to see the play, see the show. You can stream it. You can be somewhere else. You can be in your bathtub and you can still see whatever's happening in that theater.
And we should be making plays specifically to be seen in your bathtub.
Maybe as long as they're not filmed in the bathtub.
Oh, wow.
They will be filmed in the bathtub. You know, I think that's another thing. I think that, like, for me personally as an artist, like sexuality and rawness is such a vital part of art making. And it's something that we get when we go to the theater. Like, you've got 100 bodies in a room that are sweating on a July night and we're making performance art for you. Like there's a rawness and an energy to that. And I think that that's another challenge that we get to explore in the digital space is like, how do we get that sort of like exciting, like I hate using this word because it sounds so silly, but like naughty, like, ooh, we're not supposed to be doing this. I think that there's a lot of joy in that too. So yeah, I'm going to write a bathtub play.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a very juvenile person. So when I see nudity on stage, I'm like, what do I do? Do I laugh? Do I look at it? Do I look away? I don't know what. Sorry, Rob, I interrupted you. Go ahead. Please continue.
No, it depends on the nudity for that. And the context, right? and your personal feelings about it. But yeah, I was just going to say, part of it is like, how do you in this space engage all the different senses too? Like, how do you, you know, and yes, like physical touch and smell, and you know, it's easier to control from a digital aspect, sound and sight, but or input there, and control, you can't control it, but how do you engage other things? And yeah, putting in the bathtub or whatever, you know, we had a great panelist who was talking about, you know, candles and scents and how you integrate that. And I think that there are a lot more experiments that we're going to try to attempt as we do the cyber wrench and ask people to be a part of what that event is.
Wow. I did want to mention that I don't know if any of you know who Chris Jones is. Mm-hmm. He is a critic for the Chicago Tribune. He often reviews New York theater and London theater. He just wrote an article where he went to London and they're doing a COVID-friendly, for lack of a better word, production of Jesus Christ Superstar there. And he does a really, really good job outlining what he saw as far as all the precautions that were being taken and what he learned as he was talking to people about the director only worked with one actor at a time. They very rarely did scene work. He did it from behind plexiglass. The orchestra is spread out all over the place. If anyone is interested in that, it's Chris Jones, Chicago Tribune, and he did Jesus Christ Superstar, they did Jesus Christ Superstar, and that's what he's discussing. It's very, very thorough as far as him outlining all the precautions that they took, and it's also outside. It's in Regent's Park, but yeah, I very much enjoyed reading that. That's actually on my Facebook page. If anybody wants to go visit my Facebook page, or you could just look it up on Chicago Tribune with Chris Jones. So. Well, Neos, I'm so glad I got to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, of course. It was absolutely my pleasure. And, you know, thank you for being, you know, the launch show for this. I think your the system of your art is really just lends itself to this this transition in and, you know, hopefully, well, not necessarily out, but when we can get when we all have
a
vaccine.
Transformation. It's really a transformation. I feel like we're all going through this portal together, and you know, we'll find out what it looks like, and we'll co-create what it looks like.
Wow, I love vision. I love when people have vision. That's so great, you guys.
I'm an Aquarius. I'm just an Aquarian.
Aquarians have vision.
Yes, it's true.
I'm Cancer, so I just usually just sit around and cry all the time. And
you, sweetie.
Oh, thank you. That was the right thing to say. Okay, before we go, please tell our audience where they can find you and keep up with your plans for the present and the future.
I can take that. I can talk about it. So as you've heard, we have a million things going on. And we have a link tree, which is the best spot for you to access all of our offerings. So if you go to linktr.ee/NYNF, that gives you access to our Patreon, where you can get Cyber Wrench tickets. It gives you a ticket link if you just want to see one Cyber Wrench show. It gives you a link to hit play so you can listen to our podcast and
YouTube.
And our YouTube. Everything New York Neo Futurist is going to be on that link. You can also follow us at NY Neo Futurists on Instagram, on Twitter. So yeah, find us online, and there are a million ways that we can that you can join the experiment.
Yeah, you're well established. So just looking up just a general search will take you there. So seriously, but you know, I feel old bringing up a phone tree when you have a link tree. Wow. Damn. Showing my age big time.
The phone comes back in COVID. That's what's, I mean, I've been on the phone more during the pandemic this year than I have in the last decade.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. I'm kind of with you. I don't really like the phone. I'd rather text. But I'm doing a lot more, you know, Zoom calls with family and things like that. As a writer, it's usually all done through email or or text or something like that. But I'm not nearly as popular as you guys, so I expect that your phones are ringing off the hook.
Not even once. Not even once.
That's me.
I'll call you, Katie.
Okay.
See? Keep that phone tree going.
I know.
And the link tree, too. All the trees.
All the trees.
Yeah. And then join us on August 29th at 8 o'clock and watch what we've created in the Cyber Wrench. That, you know, just figured I'd say that, too.
You should. That's good. Of course. Of course. You definitely want to promote that. Well, thank you for being with us, New York Neo-Futurists. You're all amazing, and I wish you so many broken legs as we navigate our way towards a better or a different future for theater. You're all amazing.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
It's much love.
Much love. Lots of love. I swear for you guys.
I think the idea of centering a different future is exciting.
Mm.
You know, I think better implies that people already know what to do to make it better, but I don't think that's the case. I really love the idea of that intention of like, let's set towards a different future for theater.
You're all visionaries. I'm glad that that's where your mind goes. When things like this happen. This is what we need. And this is what we need to hear. So great job. You're all super. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're great.
All right.
Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the vows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, big thanks to the New York Neo-Futurists. They were sensational. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com/ Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. Your Program Is Your Ticket is on iTunes and SoundCloud and now on the theater website, Thespi, which is a theater platform that is run out of London in the UK. So that's two mentions for London. You're welcome, London. Give me a good rating, write me a review, subscribe. As you know, that helps with your profile. And a quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music for the podcast. You might be hearing it right now. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer as we transition through and out of this pandemic. Watch their content, give them all great reviews, ratings, and most importantly, donate. All of these companies, they need money. They really, really do. A lot of their ticket sales that they count on, not where they normally are, if they even are. So show some love that way. It's really nice if you do. Until our next show, so long, theater people, and curtain.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.